This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Yes, on SiriusXM Channel 371, and of course there's an assortment of other radio stations as well that have jumped on the board, Packer and Durham, and we appreciate their patronage.
How about Amari Robinson and Wally Walker in the 8 o'clock hour, huh?
Pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, both ends of the spectrum in some respects, right? What happened in 76, an incredible run for Virginia, and of course the Unity Week, so cool in the ACC. And we just get a chance to sample just a few of the great student-athletes and what they are doing, giving back to the community. Just great stuff.
Let's chronicle the night in basketball for you. There were three ball games and three home teams captured wins. We had one go to overtime, and that was at the Dome in Central New York. Let's start in Chapel Hill, where Carolina, coming off the quad one win at Virginia Tech, welcomed Louisville to Smith Center. Second go-around with these two, Tar Heels win 70-63, another double-double for Armando Bacot. Notice in the line here, he only took 8 shots. If you were to go back last 3 or 4 ball games, Bacot's shot number in terms of attempts pack is down. Teams are really trying to shield Bacot from any extra looks offensively around the bucket. We saw Virginia Tech do some different things. Louisville also employed it last night. That has given others a chance to shine. Last night, Brady Manick, again, 17 points. Leads the Tar Heels to the win.
Well, I gave you the stat earlier. North Carolina, last 5 games, shooting 64% from inside the arc, which to me is a good sign.
Yep. You know,
obviously, got to make threes. But that was a game last night that North Carolina could not afford to lose.
Right.
And that thing's tied up with 60 coming down the stretch. And Louisville is playing hard to their credit. They haven't mailed anything in. They're getting after it. But the shot selection down the stretch for Louisville, a little questionable. They only made 1 of the last 9 shots. North Carolina outscores them 10-3 to close the deal. Gets the win, and you move on to the next one. And for North Carolina, that's going to see their boys over there at NC State this weekend, which will be exciting.
Cards finished with 2 of the last 3 on the road, at Wake, at Virginia Tech, and Virginia at home.
Play hard. But I tell you what, I will say this. Given how miserable this thing has just gotten out of control at Louisville,
right?
They are playing hard.
Yes,
I go back to the road trip to Notre Dame. Man, they had a chance, right? They win the game against Clemson, which was a grinder, and they played well down the stretch. Last night, they had a chance, but again, 1 of 9 from the field to close it off. Some ill-advised threes late that just didn't look like they had any idea where it was going. But I give Louisville credit, though. They did not mail that thing in. That would have been an easy, let's see, catch you later. We're not going to beat Carolina. They had a chance last night.
We're going to save this topic for later in the week. We'll come back to it, but I'll tease it here. Ran into somebody this weekend who talked to me who has had a experience being involved in coaching searches, talking about the difficulty that Louisville is going to face in filling this job. Timing, NCAA, all sorts of little extemporaneous things that could impact ultimately what Louisville elects to do.
Well, Jay Billis brought it up last night, and he's 1,000% right. I know we've talked about this too. The NCAA... Guys, you got to make a ruling. I mean, I don't know. By the end of the day, you should have enough information to say, hey,
right.
Thumbs up, thumbs down. If it's a penalty, how bad is it? And move on. I mean, to hold these schools basically hostage over these investigations is criminal. It just doesn't serve any purpose for anybody. And
that's
as
correct.
Soon as Louisville can get that news, whether it's a slap on the wrist, nothing at all, or you get buried, whatever it is, just give us the news, and so we can move on with the rest of our lives. But it's just ridiculous what the NCAA does.
Yep, you're right about that.
In this case, doesn't do.
Yeah, we'll touch on that later in the week because there are some things here that we need to make sure they're clarified because fans, you know, no president, no AD. Well, then there are all sorts of other things. I mean, you're asking a coach to come take a job and –
Well, especially if it's a high-profile coach. I mean, Louisville is a great job.
That's correct.
In a perfect world.
Yeah.
Louisville is not a good job. It's a great job, right? Facilities, fans, tradition, history, banners, players, you name it, they got it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going to sit there and hold a cloud over somebody's head who's a big-time coach, he's going to sit there and go, well, how bad's the penalty going to be? I mean, nobody can answer the question.
There you
got to get that out first and then be able to move on. It's just crazy.
Let's give you the tight fit in the league last night. Syracuse needed overtime. They get Georgia Tech. 74-73, the final. Jimmy had 20-10. Buddy had a nice evening as well. But Cole Swider also had a double-double, 18-12 last night for the Orange, who now are 9-7 with four to go in the ACC.
Yeah, but the 9-7 is fine. That's great. You're 2 over .500. The problem is you've got four to go, and you've got three in the next 6 days, which will be at Notre Dame tomorrow, Duke at home this weekend, and then at North Carolina Monday. That right. is a murderous row. And, oh, by the way, for fun at the end, you get Miami. So yeah. You're looking about the upper tier. Boy, does Syracuse have opportunity written all over it. But this is going to be tough coming up now.
Well, for all the scoring and all the things last night, Barama Sidibe got back on the floor last night for the Orange, and that's an encouraging sign for Jim Boeheim to get something substantive, if you will, out of the post, and especially from the zone. Sidibe is the best player they've got from that aspect for sure, 100%. And going to be interesting to see kind of how that develops, I should say.
And you want to be playing your best basketball of the year. Syracuse is absolutely doing it. They've won 6 of the last 7 West. That is a great sign. It is February, getting to be March. It's kind of Jim Boeheim time, right? We've kind of seen this act before, but these next games coming up are going to tell the tale.
Off to Chestnut Hill, 71-55. BC, a 16-point winner over Boston College last night. Jaden Zachary, 4 for 4 from behind the line. He finished with 18, 8 rebounds, and 6 assists. BC forced 19 turnovers. It's not an understatement to say Florida State is a shell of itself. But I think they are, and it's a fair way to describe the struggle that Leonard Hamilton has had this year.
There's no doubt. You got four starters with an injury that they're out. They've lost 8 of 9. I pointed out to you earlier today that it was about 3.5 weeks ago. We're doing accounting, and the number one team in the league in our accounting was Florida State. That's how quickly that thing can get away from you, especially if the injury bug hit. We've seen it at NC State. We've now seen it at Florida State. Everybody's kind of beat up this time of year, but, man, Florida State throws out that starting lineup, you kind of go, well, where'd everybody go, right? 8 of 9 for the Noles, though. It's tough.
Yeah. One ball game on the slate tonight, 8 o'clock on ACC Network. Dave O'Brien, Corey Alexander will be courtside at the Peterson Event Center to see the Hurricanes and the Panthers. This is, you see, Miami's the favorite according to BPI. Miami had 3 straight wins, bookended by a pair of losses to Virginia. Miami is still in it. They are 2 games back in the loss and the win column behind Duke. Very respectable on the road, 7-2 so far this season. Pittsburgh had won 3 straight and then out of nowhere the other night lost to Georgia Tech. When I actually thought the Panthers were ascending, they flatlined one.
I didn't even recognize them this week. This past week, I didn't recognize them in Chapel Hill because they just – you did the game. They throttled North Carolina. And then here they get Georgia Tech at home on a roll, feeling good about life, and they just laid an egg. So I don't know what Pitt team you're going to get tonight. I have no earthly idea. I know this much. Miami's guards are really good. They don't turn the ball over, and they cause headaches.
Yeah.
They've been doing it to everybody all year long. And for Miami, there's still work to be done here. You know, this is not one of those things, if they stub their toe, we're okay. Hey, you still got the NCAA tournament to play for here. There's a lot of folks sitting there on that high wire act as far as you just can't limp into the ACC tournament in Brooklyn. So Miami, this is kind of like North Carolina's game last night with Louisville. You're not going to get a ton of credit for a win, but you don't want to lose these kind of games late.
The good news for Miami, and here's a look at what they have. At Pitt tonight, Virginia Tech this weekend at Coral Gables. Hokies will be welcoming that sunshine, won't they? At Boston College next week, and then at Syracuse to finish. I'd just stay out on the road, by the way, Coach Larinaga. I'm not telling you what to do, but that might be my plan.
I think you just told him what to do.
Yeah, I did. Miami holds the tiebreaker on Carolina and Wake Forest. They do not have the tiebreaker with Virginia. Now, why do I bring that up? Because a quick check of the standings will show you that Miami and Carolina are at 11-5, and Wake Forest and Virginia are at 11-6 in the way the old ACC standings set up. So let's see how this is going to play out.
Carolina's
12-5. I'm sorry, Carolina 12-5, Miami 11-5, then Wake and Virginia 11-6 apiece. So now remember, Miami tiebreaker against Carolina. Tiebreaker against Wake Forest, does not have tiebreaker on Virginia. 4 teams, 2 spots in the bye.
I just think when you've got good guards, I like that late in a season. When you've got, and they've got 3, not good, terrific guards. Right. Experience, old, they've played well together. You gave the stat of the fact that the Canes are 7-2 on the road, so they don't mind going on the road.
Right. I mean,
that's it's one thing to be good at home, but when you can take it on the road in this league or any league, you can play. So I think if you're Jim Larrañaga, take your chances tonight against Pitt with that backcourt.
You agree with Duke Notre Dame probably are in the driver's seat for the byes?
I told you who I thought the four were going to be yesterday. Mm-hmm. And I think Miami will be one of them. But, you know, this is the kind of game you just can't have a hiccup. And kind of like I said, like North Carolina last night, you cannot lose a game like that. So a lot of pressure on Miami moving forward. And they got to win this one and then get ready for Virginia Tech because that's going to be another fight. And you know the Hokies. Remember old Mr. Moore from midcourt calling bank. That they'll remember that one now. I'm telling you.
This is going to be interesting to see. The double bye. And again, we're not talking about insurance. Here's Charlie. One step, half Doink. Court, good night. Wow.
But these guards have been good all year, Wes.
They have been.
And you got to have great guard have play been. If you're going to make a run. Yeah. I don't care who you are. Your guards have got to be good. And Jim Larrañaga loves his backcourt.
Sure.
And he should.
And he, to me, the interesting thing tonight when Corey and Dave join you on the coverage will be, how does Miami handle John Hughley? Georgia Tech just kind of amoeba'd him with a zone the other night. I mean, they just kind of push guys in and out of the picture. Hughley still got some points. The thing that killed Pittsburgh the other night was turnovers.
Well, guess what Miami does?
Turns you over.
They turn you over.
Yeah. I mean, so Jeff Capel's team's got to hold on to the ball. I think they're an interesting team if they shoot it well and they do it home, and Ithiel Horton has been the key there. But when they turn it over, you don't give yourself a chance.
That's right.
They don't give yourself a chance. All right, on the other side. We've not had Coach Holloway on television, right?
No, this is a debut.
Radio, yes, I think back in the day.
Debut.
Right. So here we go. Braden Holloway has built a monster swimming and diving program at NC State, and they're fresh off another ACC championship. We're excited to have him join us, and we will do that next. There's the commish. Just another piece of hardware going in the case in Raleigh. We'll talk to Coach Holloway next on Packer and Durham.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Hey, don't forget ACC baseball. Friday night, 6 o'clock. Doak Field at Dale Park. Quinnipiac and number 9 NC State come your way right here on ACC Network and streaming live on the ESPN app.
Tommy White. How many times he go yard this time?
Wait a second. Let me give a point of clarity, by the way.
Clarity being a key word.
Yes. You know, because we are transparent about this show, are we not?
Yes, we are.
Okay. Yesterday I said my college roommate played 4 years of baseball, didn't hit 5 home runs.
Did he alert you that was incorrect?
I did. Jim Duncan called me yesterday, and Jim said, I said, what's the matter? He said, I hit 6.
Oh.
So I was wrong. He hit 6, but he didn't hit any as a freshman and sophomore. Then he started muscle building in junior and senior year and hit 6 in there 2 years. But Tommy White hit 5 last weekend for Elliott Avent and the Pac-9.
Yeah.
So there we go. Speaking of the Wolfpack, let's just go, shall we?
Hardware.
Here is the 65-time ACC Coach of the Year and the 49-time champion of swimming and diving on the men's side in the ACC. Please welcome Braden Holloway from NC State, who is overdue to make his television debut on Packer and Durham, Mark.
Coach, first of all, congratulations. I mean, I know it never gets old and every team is different. So what was different about this ACC championship team on the men's side?
Man, well, thanks for having me on and to be able to share a great week that we have with you guys. I mean, you're right. Every team is different. You know, I would say the first thing I think about this year is we didn't have any weak spots. You know, usually, a couple of the past times that we won, there was at least some weak spots in there where I would just hold my breath, you know, and hope we get through it okay. But this year we were strong in almost every single event. So just a lot of just parity across the board from all of our guys in all the events.
you double up here, obviously, and oversee both the men and the women. The men win it. The women finish second to Virginia, which is kind of the way this thing was projected after the regular season going to Atlanta last weekend. The competitive level of this event, though, and watching some of it over the weekend, is amazing. I mean, event after event, Coach, seems to be somebody just touching someone at the wall. I mean, it's amazing how close some of this stuff gets in the pool, especially in the ACC championship.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the ACC league in swimming and diving has excelled exponentially to the highest level. I mean, I would say we're one, if not the best conference, you know, for men and women in the country. We're rivaling whoever is. And so, you know, it with all the races being different lengths, it the stress levels for all the coaches out there is just high, and it could be high for 18 seconds or it's high for 15 minutes. So it adds for a lot of excitement, and there's really never even downtime, you know, at any point during the meet.
Coach, you've had the target on your chest for so long, 31 ACC championships now for NC State. That's more than any other school in any other sport, period, in this conference's history. From a coaching perspective, where do you turn from a motivational standpoint to make sure it's still fresh and clean and pure, especially for guys who've heard your spiel before from the year before? I mean, you've got to look for edges at all times. So where do you lean? Where do you turn?
Well, this year it wasn't that difficult with the men's team because they lost last year by 2 points. So it really has just kind of been there for 365 days. But, you know, I think for us, you know, each year when people evolve, people grow, people mature, you know, guys, you see them grow. But the next thing you know, you get a couple of transfers in there. You got some new freshmen. I mean, our freshmen are the most unique group of freshmen I've ever had. And they add a lot of different flavor, you know, and then also having, you know, a women's team that's going through very similar growth and has very same expectations. It kind of creates itself each and every year. You know, there's always someone says something about our team and somebody hears about it and that creates a whole nother level of motivation or, you know, so usually it kind of takes care of itself, to be honest. I mean, I don't do the same exact thing every single year because I know I can't. So there's a few things that I know that work that I'll keep and I'll kind of massage it to be a little bit different. Then I'll introduce something that I've been wanting to do and just do it the right way to kind of keep things moving.
Has the transfer portal been prevalent in swimming and diving?
You know, we check it every day. I probably, you know, there might be like 4 days where we don't check it just to kind of see. And if it's someone we recruited before and maybe we have a good relationship or we felt like it was good at the time, you know, and they may want to come back or something, or if it's a hole that I'm looking to fill. But I don't know if it's as crazy as it is in like probably basketball or, you know, or football. But I think right now, because of the NCAA allowing that COVID benefit of an extra year, if you competed during those 2 years, that a lot of kids are pursuing it just to get another degree. You know, hey, if I can swim a fifth year and I get my master's paid for, it's worth it, you know. And we've had a few. I mean, we've had a few that we've helped go to a different school. And hey, go get this. This school has your master's program that you really want. Go get it. And you get to swim again. And so I think, you know, during COVID, it's kind of been, you know, a plus for some of those kids. But it is scary, you know, how much, you know, kids are in there, you know. And, you know, I look at it as I just hope kids don't look at it as you know, when you have adversity, step up to the plate and figure it out. You know, don't just put your name in a portal is kind of how I look at it.
I want to ask you about going to school there, being successful in your own right there, and now coming back to coach at your alma mater. And the emotions you go through, not just being the head coach of an incredibly successful program, but also being an alum of that program. Where does that kind of fit in the way you go about day to day and the success you've had?
Well, I think there's just more heart and emotion that naturally gets put in. I mean, my wife and I met here at NC State. She swam as well. And so when I came back, I almost was scared to come back because I was like, I don't want to go back and fail. I cannot I can fail somewhere else and not feel as bad, you know, like, but if I go there and fail, I'm going to feel this is going to be horrible. And she just kind of slapped me in the face and was like, oh, shut up. Let's go back and get it done. And so we kind of came back and, you know, I think it does help when you can kind of tell some cool stories from the old days. Yeah. For, you know, that I went through or that I was a part of. And, but I think just naturally there's just so much more, I think, that I put in where I probably don't, you know, I just don't think twice about it. It's just, this is what we're doing and I'm putting it all in there and this is home and this is what we're going to get done, you know? And I think that's kind of, it just naturally happens every single day.
All right, real quick. I want to run this little clip of video we have apparently from last weekend. Because, I mean, there's locked in, and then there's locked in, right? Now, this looks locked in. Here's the video. Is that locked in? I just want to make sure. Is that the top of the gearbox, Brayden?
That was when I was clicking on all cylinders right there. That was after a big morning. We put five guys in the A final of 2NIM, which last year was an event where we struggled a little bit. So we put a lot of attention into that this year. And Slim, the cameraman from the ACC, he and I, we've known each other for so long now, and he's always teasing me like, oh, I'm going to get you in a good moment. I keep waiting for that good moment. And I saw him there when I was cheering, and the camera was literally 2 feet from my face. Yeah. So I was like, I'm just like going to get all into there. And I think he was happy with it.
Yeah, Slim will lock you down if you're not careful. I know Slim. He will lock you down. You better be careful.
You know, it was a pretty good weekend for Boo Corgan and the boys, though, wasn't it? I mean, you know, Wes Moore wins the regular season for the women's basketball. And, of course, we saw Pat with the Friday night and Sunday night duels win the regular season from that perspective. And then you guys just closing the shop again. I tell you, Boo's going to have to get an additional building for all that hardware you guys keep bringing in town. That's a sweet deal. That was a great weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and all of us, we all communicate. We all talk and mm-hmm. – You know, I think the ringleader is Elliot Avent. You know, he's the guy who is always in everybody. He's always reaching out. You know, I got a nice text from Kevin Keats. And, you know, it all started with Lori and the cross country team just reminding NC State, like, it doesn't matter if we're blue collar or the type of school we are or where we're located or whatever, you could win here. And I think we always kind of keep each other on our toes because people keep raising the bar no matter what direction you look. The bar is being raised.
Yeah, and that's a good thing. You know, success breeds success, period. Everybody under one roof with all that stuff. Before we let you go, though, especially after seeing that clip, we've been asking coaches this question, and I'm really curious to hear what this answer is. What's the walk-up music? What's the one that really gets you jacked up like we just saw you 2 seconds ago? What are we playing? What's the song?
I'm going 1980s, late 80s Metallica. Anything from the late 80s Metallica is what I'm going with.
All right, wow. So, you know, Enter Sandman is a Virginia Tech thing, so we may have to stay away.
Yeah, even though you work there, you can't use that, right?
Yeah, and that was in the night. That one's 91. I got to go to, like, you know,
before
late 80s, you know.
I like it.
The kids hate it when I play that music at workout. They absolutely hate it.
Well, you know, hey, you're the boss.
Hey, tell him.
I know, that's what I tell him.
Hey, Brayden, tell him these trophies don't show up by magic, kids. Look at this. Look at this stack of trophies we got here. Unbelievable. Hey, great to have you with us. We wish you all the best in the NCAAs.
Thanks, guys.
You guys are terrific to follow and appreciate your time.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate having me.
All right. Got it. Brayden Holloway. About 55 times he's been ACC coach of the year. Unbelievable.
It's an incredible program. Not good. It's incredible.
Yeah.
And, you know, the women, Virginia has dominated the women's side. And NC State gets closer and closer. So the women came in second. The men have just been unbelievable. So, and like I said, it's big time.
Now let me say this, too, real quick here, because I know we got Phil Ford coming up. The coaching connectivity on these campuses is better right now. And we talked to a lot of people, Virginia, NC State, Carolina. Courtney Banghart talked about it with us a couple months ago. We've heard it from several institutions. The coaching connectivity right now and what they've been through in the last 2 years and all these things back, It has to be good.
Well, here's the thing. Between name, image, and likeness, the transfer portal,
right.
Just the pressure to win. I don't care what the sport is. You know everybody has a common denominator and trait where they're sitting there going, hey, how did you handle this? Mm. And you try to learn from everybody. And when you get success in the building, if you will, everybody enjoys it. They really do. And that's the way it's supposed to work. So I guarantee you, Boo Corrigan and company feeling good about life. And again, you start talking about a football season coming up this spring into the fall.
Yeah.
And the expectations at NC State, national love, it's coming their way.
Speaking of name, image, and likeness, could you imagine if that had been around in 1975?
Or I was going to say, even in the early 80s for the Clemson golf program.
Stop.
Unlimited. SO Club. When, sponsorships.
You already had that. You didn't have to have an NIL for that.
That's a very good point.
When we come back, an ACC legend and a North Carolina legend. If you're on the front row, you're one of those. Hey, we had some Hey Woody audio last night
in
the doc.
It was good.
Had a lot of Hey Woody audio last night from those early years as the voice of the Tar Heels. Phil Ford is next on Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham, a Tuesday edition
on
February 22nd of 22. Wally Walker started all this guest-wise today, and I made reference of his relationship with our next guest, and that would be the legendary Phil Ford.
Yeah, another front row guy, right?
No doubt.
Yeah, Lenny Rosenbluth was with us a couple weeks ago. He's a front row guy. Phil Ford's a front row guy. He joins us this morning, the Carolina legend out of Rocky Mount. Wally Walker said that you guys might have created the draft lottery in Houston. You care to confirm or deny that? And this had nothing to do with the ACC, but you want to confirm or deny that y'all might have helped spark the draft lottery for 1985?
Well, our record didn't hurt the draft, I'll tell you that. We got a good pick because of that.
This was awesome last night to watch the 1975 ACC tournament. You become the first freshman to win the Case Award. I mean, what do you remember about 75? Because they showed those first couple rounds and, you know, heck, it was touch and go, Phil, even from day one in Greensboro, it felt like.
Well, what I think people tend to forget is you remember the old Big Four tournament they used to have in December? We lost two games in that tournament. We came in fourth place. We lost to NC State and Duke in the Big Four tournament. And for Coach Smith to prepare us and to have us in a position to win the ACC tournament. You know, I talk to Skip Brown all the time now, and he swears out the ball didn't hit the scoreboard. Of course, I say it did. But, I mean, we squeaked by Wake. Tree Rollins had a shot. He had just hit the shot, a little 4 or 5 foot jump hook that didn't go in. So that was a really close tournament, and we were fortunate to have won that tournament.
That I still think that tournament, given the fact that the total margin was 20 points for all the games played. And it's kind of funny, Phil, how things work out, right? Because did it hit the scoreboard? Did it not hit the scoreboard? You know, because Wake had you dead to rights. I mean, you got to be sitting there going, man, we're in deep trouble. And I know if you watch that documentary last night, Dean Smith's like, hey, we're still going to win this game. We're going to figure out a way to do it. It's kind of crazy how it all works out, isn't it? I mean, at the end of the day,
well, you know, your dad tells me all the time that he was sitting eye level with the scoreboard, you know, and it didn't hit. Now, I don't know about that. I know he's a Wake Forest guy, but, you know, it was really that was one of the closest tournaments that I've ever played in as a player. And as I said before, to, you know, going overtime in the first two games and then to beat the defending national champion with arguably the greatest player ever in the history of our league, you know, between he and Mike and Ralph, I wouldn't want to live on the difference. You know, it was a great thing for North Carolina basketball.
And by the way, on that Wake Forest play, the scoreboard game, where were you when the ball was thrown?
Probably somewhere running behind Skip like I did all game. I can't really remember trying to catch Skip someplace.
Oh, my God. That meant Kuster had to guard Jerry Schellenberg, right? Is that the way that worked? Who was on Jerry Schellenberg?
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
Skip was a handful, man. Great
guy. No question. If I asked you the tournament, just the tournament event itself, You played in it. You coached in it. You've been to countless of them. What's changed about it? What's the same as it was in your first one in 1975 to what we'll see in 2 weeks in Brooklyn, Phil?
Well, obviously, my first year in the ACC, two teams could go to the NCAA tournament. Previously to that, you know, you had to win the tournament to go. So it wasn't that pressure of actually having to actually win the tournament to go to the NCAA. But, you know, you're talking about the granddaddy of all basketball tournaments in the country, collegiate basketball tournaments. And, you know, to be a winner of that, you know, that goes a long way. You know, you never forget that. I don't think it's lost any of its luster. I think teams really still want to win the ACC tournament. That's a nice line on your resume, ACC basketball tournament winner.
I always love to interview former North Carolina players that played under Coach Smith because the answers are always different. And I know this is going to be a broad-based question, but do the best you can with it. What did you learn the most from playing with Coach Smith?
Well, I mean loyalty and humility, you know, I think is very important in Coach Smith's life. The older I get, the more spiritual I am. Spirituality was a big part of his life, but playing together, nobody's more important than anybody else. You know, the guys that don't play a lot, you know, just important that the guys that do play a lot. It's just so many things that not on the basketball court that he taught us, but on the basketball court, you know, he taught us to always do the best that we possibly could. And we believe that if we did what he told us to do, we would win. We actually believe that. And, you know, he said when we lost, it was his fault. And when we won, it was because of us. But we kind of felt that if we lost, we just didn't do what he told us to do.
You grew up at a time, and it was chronicled a little bit last night. You grew up at a time where television became one of the driving forces, Phil, behind ACC basketball. I mean, Jim Thacker, Mark's dad, Bones McKinney. I mean, games were on television all the time. They were constantly on radio. There weren't pro sports really in the ACC footprint except in Washington. Georgia Tech had yet to enter the league. Did you feel like it was the top step of, like, everything going on in day-to-day life? And how difficult was that? I think people forget now it's commonplace so much television that in that era, there wasn't a lot of – there. This was what basketball was. Everybody, when you saw basketball on TV, it was this, right?
Well, you know, at the tournament, you have people telling you about at work or at school with transistor radios. You know, you have teachers pulling in televisions in classes to watch the tournament, you know. Each school kind of like had a hotel, and the maids cleaning up the rooms had stickers of that school on their carts. So it was a big deal. And I said, as I said before, I think it's the grandfather of all conference tournaments. And to win the ACC tournament is a really big deal. And I think teams really still try their best to win that tournament.
Phil, when you go to an ACC tournament, especially if it's in Charlotte or Greensboro, whatever the case may be, I mean, how much time do you have to give yourself leading into a game knowing that you get, I'm going to kiss babies, take pictures, write autographs? I mean, I got to imagine you've got to schedule your appearances in an ACC tournament as a fan a little differently than somebody else would.
Man, not anymore. You know, I'm the old guy. No. You know, it's funny. I was having breakfast with my daughter and a couple other friends this summer, and a young kid walked by me and had my jersey on. And my daughter looked at me and said, "Dad, I don't think he knows who you are." Well, his dad knew, and his dad sent him over to the table for me to sign it. But I'm just the old guy right now, man. He said, "Who's the old dude that can hardly walk now?"
Oh, I know better than that. Man, that's Phil Ford we're talking about.
We have talked so much about the eras of this league. And you readily admit you grew up David Thompson, right? Charlie Scott impacted your life.
Yeah.
What does it mean to you to hear that guys that played in the 90s, I mean, guys you coached at Carolina, and then guys who have continued on, to understand the legacy, the generational legacy of this league? What does that mean to somebody like yourself who's part of that?
Well, it's an honor. It's an honor for me to have played at the University of North Carolina. It's an honor for me to have played in the ACC. I started following Carolina basketball around the sixth or seventh grade, you know, with Charlie and Eddie Fogler and and Dr. Clark and Dick Grubar and those guys. And for me to have an opportunity to go to that school and play at that school and play in the league, you know, it's a great honor. And if there by some chance that, you know, guys would remember, you know, the things that we did when I was a player in North Carolina, it's a great honor. I mean, this league speaks for itself. You know, nobody has to pump this league up. You know, it's been so many great players, so many great teams, so many great schools involved. It's just the best conference in the country year in and year out, I think.
Phil, I've said this to you before, but I was a big NC State fan growing up.
I know how you felt about me that night in 1975.
Oh,
I'm not going to forget that, man.
I know, and I watched that last night, and I remember. I know exactly where I was in the Greensboro Coliseum, and as soon as I saw Dean Smith stand up and do this, I was like, man, I was about ready to scream. And I said, nobody can guard 12, man. We can't guard 12. And I watched that again last night, and the smile came across my face because I knew you were going to be on
all
today.
The time. And as you guys know, Coach McClendon invented it, but, you know, Coach Smith kind of perfected it, and we used it. And, you know, it was in within the rules. As Coach Smith always said, you know the rules of golf. That'll save you a couple strokes every round. So, you know, we used it to our advantage.
Hey, Phil, how would you have defended it if you were me, all right? How would you have said, all right, this Phil Ford's a problem. They're going to go four corners. How would you have defended the four corners back then? And I'm giving you great players. What would you have done?
I'm not sure, you know, because, you know, guys have had success playing at man-to-man. Some guys, like sometimes at Maryland, I know they would like to trap it, but Coach Smith came up with a way for us to play against a zone trap. So, you know, it all depends the score and the time. It's just that's a hypothetical situation that I'm not sure what I would do. You know, I would definitely try to put the shoe back on our foot, you know, instead of us controlling the game, you know, controlling the clock, you know, when to score. You know, I would try to put that you control those things. And I guess if you do that, you know, you try to speed up the tempo and, you know, trap, force the ball to someone that's not a very good ball handler. But if, as I've said many times, in order for four corners to work, you have to have five very good ball handlers on the court and five very good free throw shooters that can hit free throws in some pretty tough times and five good defenders on the court too.
I want to wrap with this, at least from my perspective. We went through this era and we talk about the tournament. And I know it meant something to you because you've talked about it before, that after the 76 season was over, Coach Smith coached the Olympic team, and there were four guys from Carolina, with Steve Shepard from Maryland, Kenny Carr from NC State, and Tate Armstrong from Duke, that all were a member of the 76 Olympic team that went to Montreal and got the gold back for the United States. It's something we don't talk about a lot in this league. But yet, last night, the documentary, we saw Shepard, we saw you, obviously Walter's on that documentary, Mitch, those guys. I mean, that had to mean something to you guys as a league to dominate an Olympic team that went to Montreal and brought back the gold medal.
Well, another credit to Coach Smith. You know, I mean, and we were all college guys playing against pros from other nations that had played years together, and Coach Smith, I think, had about 6 weeks to put us together, but he instilled in us the only important thing in the Olympic Games was to win the gold medal back. It didn't matter how many points you scored or how many assists you had or how many rebounds you had. If we didn't win the gold medal back, it wasn't going to be a successful Olympics. And fortunately, it was very successful. Puerto Rico tried to spoil it. You know, Butch friend to this day, was a thorn throughout my career, but we were able to hold off a good Puerto Rican team and win the gold medal.
Yeah. Hey, great to see you. Be well. Look forward to catching up with you soon.
You too, man. Always good to see you guys.
Yep. Phil Ford, always a blast. Appreciate it very much. Be well.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. Thank you, man.
Four corners. I'm telling you what, as soon as Dean Smith would stand up, point to number 12 and do this.
Yeah.
We're going four. You'd be like, game's over. This thing is done. Can't stop them.
Like Such we've done awesome. In the past, we're going to show you a quick clip of next week's episodes. 7 and 8 next week. We'll show it to you next. And we move into an era next week where things got a little physical. Especially in 1989 at the Omni in Atlanta. That coach from West Point turned out to be pretty good, didn't he?
Yeah, not bad. What's he doing these days?
I'm about ready to wrap it up, I've been told. We'll check in on next week's edition next on Packer and Durham.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
From 1978 to 80, the Duke Blue Devils had gone to the NCAA final, been ranked number one in the nation, and had won 2 ACC tournaments. Then in March of 1980, their head coach Bill Foster left. Duke Athletic Director Tom Butters chose to replace Foster with Mike Krzyzewski, an unheralded coach whose Army team had just finished a season with 9 wins and 17 losses, to the surprise of most.
For the sake of accuracy, if indeed accuracy means anything, the job was not offered to anyone else. He is my first choice, and he will remain my first choice. Coach Mike Krzyzewski.
Thanks a lot for all the support.
I'm looking at the news on TV, and it's going to, Duke has a new coach in their program. And I was like, really? Mike? The guy couldn't pronounce his name.
It's Krzyzewski. And if you think that's bad, it was a lot worse before I changed it.
The response to Krzyzewski's hiring was, who in the hell is this?
In Krzyzewski's first season, Duke went from being one of the nation's top teams to a mediocre one. And in his second, they were bad, finishing with a record of 10-17, their worst in 55 years.
I had no idea what the ACC was actually about. I mean, from a distance, you respected it, you knew it was the best conference, but from coaching at Army, it was at a whole different level. It wasn't a game, it was a religion.
Next Monday night, the tournament on ACC Network. And you saw the graphic in the background. Oh, yes. We get to Randolph Childress and the boy from St. Croix next week, too. Tim Duncan. Pretty good next week. It goes 84-89 and then 90-97. That would be Coach Smith's last tournament, 97.
Mike Krzyzewski.
It's Krzyzewski. Kay had jokes in the introductory presser.
But, I remember that.
So do
I. And you know, you had Valvano over there at NC State who was telling jokes, and everybody had it. You had Cremins down there doing his thing in Atlanta. We knew about Lefty. You knew about Terry Holland. Yeah. And, of course, there was the standard, which was Dean Smith. And Duke was kind of like, what are they doing there? And
then Mock.
That guy you saw right there, Tom Butters?
Yeah.
Oof. How much credit does he get? Because he had a vision. Mm-hmm. He went and did the search. That's my guy. I don't want to hear anything about it. Give him time to do his thing. Yep. And it got off to a rocky start. And the rest is history.
Mark, you know what they called Mike and Jimmy and me, the young guns, when we came into the league?
They were.
Yeah. Oh, there's a great story about the ACC spring meetings at Myrtle Beach where Cremins and Valvano and Krzyzewski hide in the men's room because Dean Smith liked to be the last guy into the meeting, and Cremins and Kay and Valvano waited in the men's room until all the other coaches got in, and then they showed up after Dean just to kind of check the room.
Yeah, well, guess what? He was the godfather.
He was the godfather. He and Lefty and all those
and
cats.
And proven otherwise.
Yeah. Thanks to Phil Ford. Thanks to Wally Walker. Great to visit with Amari Robinson and Braden Holloway of NC State, all a part of the show.
A lot of fun.
Get excited about next week. All right, on this date, here we go. You ready? 8 years ago today, Jim Boeheim goes to Cameron and gets run. Ejected after storming onto the court. Number 5 Duke beats number 1 Syracuse. There's the play by C.J. Fair.
Terrible call.
You got to be kidding me.
He's right.
You got to be kidding me.
Don't read lips. Yeah. Do not read lips here.
Tony Green, you're not on my holiday list. Tony, I'm telling you, I'm not sending you that card.
What comes after one T? That would be two T's.
That would be two. Early exit for the coach. Also, on this date 5 years ago, John Gillen hit the shot to beat Duke at the Carrier.
They've had some great games.
Oh, my God.
They hook up this weekend.
Saturday night, another one on the way. Thanks to Josh Macri, Drew Brooks, Megatron directed today.
Great as always.
Chester's all good. Fuller, I think, as well, so to speak. For Mark Packer, West Durham, see you tomorrow morning, 7 a.m., Packer and Durham.
Tune into Packer and Durham weekday mornings from 7 to 10 Eastern for the best conversations about everything from the ACC. Find it on the ACC Network, SiriusXM Channel 371, and streaming on the ESPN app.